This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3636 for Monday, the 11th of July, 2022. Today's show is entitled, The Importance of Data Reduction. It is part of the series Privacy and Security. It is hosted by Lurking Prion and is about 39 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is I have a discussion about data reduction with special guest and author R. Brady Frost.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever it happens to be, wherever you are in the world, you're listening to The Stuff Evil Steve Doesn't Want You to Know, and I'm your host, Lurking Prion. So, recapping what we talked about changing passwords, that was my first episode. Talk about good idea fairy hunting, where we go and we look for the guys who are, or gals, who are coming up with good ideas and ingratiating ourselves with them. I've had really good luck with that in the past as far as implementing security within an organization. We talked about who the fuck is Evil Steve. We actually had two episodes on that. Talked about implementing two-factor authentication and getting a password manager. And this week we are joined by R. Brady Frost, an author, writes sci-fi and other cool stuff. And welcome to the show, Brady.
Hey, thank you. Excited to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. It's always good to be joined by other people so that you can not feel like you're just talking to yourself.
I talk to myself all the time.
I do too. I answer myself too. Oh, shit. So, I understand you have some questions for me.
Yeah. So, where did this idea for Evil Steve come from?
All right. That's it's actually kind of a funny story. I was teaching Security Plus and A Plus for the Air Force. I stood up the 8570 course for the Air Force. And we were teaching these students Security Plus, but I didn't want them to just come in and get a certification. That was never the idea for 8570. Matter of fact, I even got to sit down with the guy who came up with 8570, and he was horribly distraught with what had happened to it, where it just became a certification game. That wasn't his goal at all. He actually wanted people to get the value of what was being taught from a security aspect rather than just having a certification. But all the branches implemented it differently, and it became a horrible mess. But when I was teaching my students, I wanted them to realize that it's not things that are attacking us. Everybody talks about worms and viruses and ransomware, but what they don't realize is there's actually a person on the other end of a keyboard somewhere that purposely attacked you. And I wanted them to start thinking and keep thinking about security in the context of a person is attacking you, not a thing. And Steve was one of the guys that I was teaching with, and he was known to have kind of a bristly personality. So I made Evil Steve, and it worked. Everyone was like, okay, cool, you know, Evil Steve. I thought he was using Evil Rob when he taught, but as it turns out, no, he wasn't. And he didn't even know where Evil Steve came from until this year I was talking to him. And started laughing. He's like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. But yeah, Evil Steve actually is like the main bad guy for Air Force Cyber Command. So whenever they're talking about the bad guy, it's Evil Steve. It's kind of caught on and became part of the culture. And yeah, that's Evil Steve. So
pretty awesome. That's a good story. I like that.
Yeah. So I've actually got a domain for Evil Steve. Yeah. So I'm looking to get that set up and rolling. It's kind of difficult right now because of the international political situations that are going on. So
it's understandable.
Yeah. So it's hard to have domains in Russia right now. Well, let me rephrase. It's hard to manage domains in Russia right now.
I bet.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right, so. Question? Okay. Yeah. I was just gonna say, like, I think, you know, if for the listeners who have followed these these episodes, you know, yeah. and myself in general, like, I feel like, you know, most of us are generally pretty security conscious. We try to be, you know, we're busy. There's a lot going on, you know, passwords, password managers, you know, two-factor authentication. We're seeing that more and more. You know, our phones want to be involved in two-factor authentication. Our email accounts, you know, suggest it. If we don't have it enabled, we're getting an alert for it. You know, some of us have gotten better at looking for phishing emails. Our grandparents are great at sending those out, or our parents.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so some of us are catching on. You know, are there any areas that, you know, maybe we're overlooking?
Do you have any data in the cloud?
Of course. Yeah, I'm an author.
Okay, so you've got stuff. So, like, how many Gmail accounts, Microsoft accounts, Apple accounts, Yahoo accounts, how many of those do you have?
Too many.
How long have you had them?
For a while.
Okay.
So my original Gmail account, I got in on the beta. And you know what? You're going to laugh because, here, I'm going to pull it up. I have 16,053 unopened emails.
Wow.
And I'm not joking. I just read that off my screen.
That is crazy. That is insane.
I need them. I need them because you never know. You know, Representative Blake Moore has a newsletter, and he's telling me that Better Cybercrime Metrics Act, and this all about that, about the Better Cybercrime Metrics Act, and the supporting the American Circuit Boards Act and constituent meetings and stuff like that. Like that's important. He's telling me all about the cybercrime. I haven't opened it, and I have no intent to open it, but it's in my email box, and if I ever need it, I know where I can find it.
That might be helpful, or it might not. Have you ever like emailed yourself something from work?
Yes, I have.
Stuff to work on. Now I know you've had this email and these email accounts for a while. Is there anything that you may have emailed yourself in the past, like maybe mortgage documents, bank statements, maybe passwords to somebody like your wife because she needed a password to something, maybe your social security number, anything like that?
Probably. I'm not going to lie to you. I have probably done that, especially anytime you go to refinance your house. You know, yeah. they want your all your stuff. And yeah. How do they get it? Like, you know, you can upload it through DocuSign sometimes. Sometimes they just want you to send it over to the mortgage broker in an email. So, yeah, now that you mention that, I probably have quite a few of those emails sitting in my sent items box.
And, you know, a lot of people have dated. There's a lot of people who have dated. And, you know, when I was single and I was dating, I used to get pictures all the time. All the time. And I know I'm not the only one. And I know people have sent pictures. But you know, the thing is those things are still sitting in your mailbox. All of those old conversations that you've had with people. And it's one of those things that we just get email and it sits in our box. And we just think, okay, great. It's there. I can get it whenever I need it. The flip side is if Evil Steve gets access to your account, there is a treasure trove of data sitting there at his disposal, and he can do anything that he wants with it. And just the mortgage papers for refinancing your house gives him absolutely everything he needs to become our Brady Frost.
That's true. And you know, I have emailed myself drafts of chapters as an author. You know, I've got two published books out there, and I'm constantly working, and I'm constantly on the go. So someone out there, you know, might want that, and then they go looking for that and they find all this other stuff. You know, you make a really good point here. My entire life is sitting in these accounts.
Yeah, it's all there. And that's the problem. See, this is the biggest problem with the society that we have in InfoSec is the business community and people in general. We are all about data. We want to have massive amounts of data on hand at all times. The problem is, whenever Steve gets access to your organization, he has access to massive amounts of data because it's there and available at all times because you might need that thing from 10 years ago. When in reality,
I am constantly using that search feature, and I know that there are folks out there, they've got the Google foo. You know, we constantly have to keep so much in our brains, because I'm not just an author. I also work full time. You know, I've got two graduate degrees. I've gone the school route. I've worked full time the entire time. So my brain is just full of data. And the way I survive is I search my inbox. So what I need to know from you, Rob, I guess, is what can I do about this? Because like you said, I am addicted to this information. I need it. So how do I go forward still okay. holding on to this information, but getting it in a more safe environment?
Okay. So there's some information that you need. There's important stuff that you look for all the time. And you can just pull up your history of your searches, and that'll really quickly tell you what kind of information is important. So what I would recommend doing is setting up folders for those emails, and then set up rules to automatically move important emails to those specific folders.
Okay.
All right. So everything else is sitting in your mailbox. The next thing I would do is I would download literally all of my emails. All, did you know you could even do that?
You know, when I saw it was a feature, because I have, let's see, I have a total of 25,000 plus emails, I guess. So I have opened 9,000 of them. And I'm running out of storage space, and I don't want to pay Google extra money, you know, just to store my emails. And so, yeah, like every now and then I go and delete some. And I did see that there is a feature to download that stuff. But, yeah, I guess without knowing how to manage that information once I download it, I didn't really take it any further.
Well, when you download it, it comes down as a zip file.
Okay.
Everything is there. All of your emails are there. All of the attachments that are in those emails are there. So you download it to a zip file. Now you have all of your emails in a zip file. Maybe put that on a disk that's not connected to the internet, like on a hard drive or a thumb drive. Even better would be to encrypt it using a GPG key or something else. And then you could just put that encrypted file on your Google Drive. That way you've got access to it no matter where you're at. And then what I would do is I would delete out all of the emails from my inbox. You've already moved the ones that are important to those folders. You set up a search rule, you move all those to those folders. So all of those emails are sitting there, they're still ready for you. The other 15,000, delete them. They're not gone. They're sitting in that zip file. So if you find out, oh my gosh, I need that, well, that's no problem. You can go open the zip file, search for it, and there you go. Is it a little more of a hassle? Sure. But now what you've done is you have shrunk the amount of data that you're sending or leaving in your inbox. And then what I would do is I would set up a rule to delete all emails when they reach 4 weeks of age. Because if you think about it, in the world today, if you have an email that's 4 weeks old, is it really even relevant anymore?
You know, every now and then I'll find one. But if I'm archiving them, then I guess it's not really that much different, is it?
No. Well, I mean, the ones that are going to be important, you're going to move to your important folders.
Right.
And if you don't want to delete the emails, you could, again, just download them and keep them in a zip file. I know a lot of people don't want to delete. That's fine. You don't have to. I personally believe in deleting. If I don't need it, delete it. But if you want to save it, you could just keep downloading zip files. And that way, your inbox is very minimal and you've only got the emails in there that you actually need. That way, if your account does get compromised, because, I mean, Steve's pretty creative. And eventually, we're going to fall for it. He's going to come up with a good enough scenario, good enough ploy, or we're just going to have a bad day where we didn't have enough coffee. And boom, let's minimize the amount of damage that Steve can do when he does get access to our accounts.
That's a very good point. Now, is it just email? I mean, should I be looking to do this sort of a thing on any other types of media or communications?
Yeah. The other thing you got to keep in mind is with all of your email accounts, there's also an associated drive, like Google Drive, Microsoft OneDrive. You've got Dropbox, if you have any Dropbox accounts or Box accounts. You've got all of these cloud storage accounts that have information in it that's just sitting there. Again, is this information being protected? Because if somebody gets access to your Gmail account, they also have access to your Google Drive. So you might want to go through, you might want to go through the information that's on all of those. And again, if you need it, put it into a zip folder and encrypt it. It's there if you need it, but it's not sitting there in plain text. Now, can Steve break the encryption and get in? Sure. Sure. Is he going to have to work harder for it? Yes. Is there probably an easier target to mess with? Yes.
Yeah, and I remember that from your first episode on passwords and the length of passwords and how that can drastically increase the amount of time that it would take even with a brute force or rainbow tables to go through and try to crack your password. So yeah. If I incorporate that when I'm encrypting these files, if I'm incorporating that kind of a mindset, then I can make this a lot easier on myself.
Absolutely. The next thing I would do is I would also look at the information that you have on your computers and your phones. And again, how much of that information do you actually need readily at hand?
So like maybe old text messages or
Old text messages are a treasure trove. Oh my gosh. If you were to scroll through all of your texts, you might be surprised at the amount of information that's sitting in there. Do you really need them? I would argue that you don't. But again, a lot of apps allow you to download those texts. So you could download the text and save them in a zip file and then delete the ones that are on there.
Yes, that is, you know, I'm finding that it's a relatively, what you're telling me right here, it's a relatively straightforward concept, but in a way it's so revolutionary because like you said, we're addicted to data. I'm sure everything in our society these days is addicted to data. The companies want our data. They, you know, all the data that I'm constantly getting offered, hey, you know, come back and try our cloud service. We want to house your data. Of course you do. And I love having cloud storage. So, you know, that's an idea that it appeals to me, and I'm sure I'm not alone. But no. What you're saying is that we have to be a little bit more conscious about the way that we're storing our data and how we're just leaving it there.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. You've got to think of your digital storage as your desk. All right. So you have important files in your house, and right now they're all just sitting on top of your desk, out there in the open. So if somebody
is my webcam on? Where are you in my office? Because my desk is cluttered with important documents.
We don't talk about that. yes, that's another subject we can talk about later. But no, your desk, it's just piled with all these papers, including mortgage documents and things like that. And we're smart enough to realize, hey, some of these documents are really important and we don't want anything to happen to them. Like if we had a fire or a flood, or if somebody broke in and burgled our house. So we set up a safety deposit box at a bank if we're really paranoid. Most of us have some kind of a little home safe or something like that that we can put the important papers in. Well,
sure.
Shouldn't you have a safe for your important information that's online?
Well, when you put it that way, it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, at home, we're taking those physical paper documents that are really important, like our birth certificates and our marriage licenses and our mortgage deeds, and we're putting them into a safe. And yet, online, all those copies are sitting there in plain text for anyone who has access to your account.
This is the sound of my mind being blown. So it really is just that easy, right? You're telling me all I have to do is just download these archive files that I have just sitting here.
Yep.
And then just zip them up and encrypt them and put them on the cloud storage, or it, better yet, even keep a copy off the cloud storage in a secure location.
Maybe in that safe that you've got in your house.
Huh.
It's going to be really hard for a hacker to get information that isn't even on the internet. I'm just going to throw it out there.
I have to say, I think I'm sold. This is, I mean, it doesn't sound that hard to do. I mean, it's going to be a process deleting these emails after I put them in a secure archive. But, you know, even my 14-year-old daughter is constantly telling me that it's disgusting. I've got all these emails in my inbox. And I would swear she must have listened to this in the past, went in the future and listened to this episode, because she keeps a bare minimum inbox. So she's on top of things, I guess. Maybe that's we give the younger generation so much grief, but it seems like she's light years ahead of me on this one.
Absolutely. But they're very good at reading stuff, and they don't want the clutter sitting there because they're bombarded with data. It's everywhere. They get it at school. They get it from their friends. They get it from their social media. Everything they do is on their phone or on their tablet. So, I mean, there's just data everywhere. So it's a matter of practicality for them. Let's keep what we've got to a bare minimum so we can focus on what's actually worthy of our time. So in a way, they're practicing good security concepts without even realizing that it's good security.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm gonna have to, after we get done recording this episode, I'm gonna have to go tell her what a good job she's doing.
Maybe
admit defeat, and then I'm gonna come around and see things her way.
Oh, a slice of humble pie.
Yeah, it's good to eat one every now and then.
It is. Keeps us from getting our head too big, but yeah. The other thing that you might want to think about, I know that you travel, and I know that you have to check your email from different places and stuff like that. I would recommend going into all of your accounts and setting up one-time passwords. You can do it real easy in Google. You can do it in LinkedIn. You can do it in Microsoft. Go into the security section and you can generate like a list of 10 one-time codes that you can use instead of your password. Now, let's think about this. At work, you go to work, you log into Facebook, you log into Gmail, look, your work is inspecting your data. All of that information is in plain text. You just gave your employer your login credentials. Now, we trust that they're going to do the right thing and not keep it, right?
Well, you would hope so.
You would hope so. And I know that we're all working for ethical companies, right?
We would hope so.
I mean, even still, from public Wi-Fi, an airport, a hotel, here's the thing. Somebody at some point in time is going to be able to see that information as it's being transmitted from you to whatever server it's going to. Use the one-time password so that all they get is a password that cannot be reused.
You just brought up a really good point, because I was traveling with the family last year, and it's something that I have a bit of a security background. I'm not a complete neophyte, but my wife has this uncanny ability to get herself into tricky situations with computers. And we were sitting in the hotel, and it's something for me that I am aware of, but she didn't. She wasn't being attentive, and she had connected her phone to the Wi-Fi, and it was close enough to look like the hotel's Wi-Fi. But it actually was not the hotel's Wi-Fi. So in that case, you're totally on the nose with that one. She logged into Facebook. She logged into her email to make sure that the kids were doing all right. you know, and all I had to like, which Wi-Fi are you connected to? And as soon as I saw that, yeah, like I had to tell her that she had to change all of her passwords that she had logged into all those accounts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, using those one-time passwords, anytime that you're not connected to a network you trust, and I generally say, if you're not at home on your own network, use a one-time password. Don't even take the chance. And you can generate those new codes all the time and use that in addition to your two-factor authentication. So just something to be a little bit more secure, and not giving away a password should you happen to connect to the wrong Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Just simple stuff. And like I said, when we do make that mistake, let's just try to make sure there's not a treasure trove of data for them to steal.
Or over 25,000 emails that they can sift through, and that's only on the receiving end.
Yeah. Not to mention what's in your sent box.
Right.
That might cause panic alone.
Well, I think I'm generally safe. But like you said, it's when you have to send those important documents, you know, those are the ones that I've been sending out. So like that's a lot of financial documents. That's a lot of, you know, drafts that I'm not ready to get out there. That's a lot of, you know, home details, stuff that my kids are involved in, you know, like sports and other interests. There's a lot of information just on my side that's gone out to trusted parties.
Yes. Now, keep in mind, once you've sent something out to the ether, it's out of your hands.
Right.
What you can control is what is in your box. And
yeah, because if they get in and I've got it sitting there, they don't need to go hack anybody else, right?
Nope, not at all. They've got everything they need to make your life miserable for the rest of your life.
No. Fun.
Uh-huh. Isn't it joyful?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, Rob, it kind of sucks because like I just said, I don't consider myself a complete security neophyte. But you've pointed out something that I really hadn't put much thought into. You know, I don't write my passwords down. I don't leave them under my keyboard. But here I am collecting this treasure trove of data on myself, and I never really even thought about it.
And that's like, we could even go into the ethics of, look, Google also has access to all of those emails that are just sitting in your inbox.
That's true. Yep.
Do they look at them?
Well, so from what I've read is a person might not, but the algorithm does. And I've noticed I get ads based on emails I've sent, and that's not even me saying stuff in front of my phone. So unfortunately, yes, I think in one form or another, whether it's a robot, a piece of code, or human eyes, Google is definitely looking at my emails, and they're probably looking at the ones that I decide to keep versus the ones that I delete. They probably have an entire profile just based on my interactions with my inbox.
Absolutely. And they're not the only ones. Here's the thing. If you're going to run a free service like Google, you've got to make money somewhere, right?
That means I'm the product.
You are the product. Absolutely. Anything that you use for free, your data is the product. They are monetizing you. And the question is how much do you really want to make for them?
I'm a generous guy, but I don't think I'm that generous.
Google, they're kind of a big company, right?
One of the biggest, yeah.
They generally have a lot of profits, right?
Yeah, lots of profits.
And it's not from you paying them for services.
No. Well, I do have my domains through Google Domain Services, but you are correct. I don't think there are enough domain sales every year to add up to their level of corporate compensation.
Nope. But the data that they have on you and the ability to market you to advertisers, that's where the money comes from.
I guess that leaves us all with a question.
Yeah.
Does using our data equate to being evil? And if that's the case, then is Google breaking one of their original tenets of don't be evil? And I think it's probably, you know, once a company gets so big, it's kind of hard not
well, they
to
did
be
change
evil
that.
To someone.
They did change that tenet.
What? Are you saying that they're no longer not going to be evil?
What I'm saying is that's no longer the tenet that they put out.
Yeah, oh boy. So I guess we all should have seen it coming.
Of course. Of course we should have.
I see what you're saying. I did just hear about a new email service out there. I'm very excited about it. It's called Skynet, and I think I might be moving my emails over to those servers instead.
You know, companies are starting to realize that people do like their privacy. hopefully we'll see some things, but in the meantime, I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, bad things about Google or Microsoft or anything like that, but
no. Let's
just minimize the amount of data that we have sitting out there.
Right.
We're all focused on availability, whereas
yes.
not everything needs to be that available. I mean, just like you're willing to take some time to open up a safe to get out your birth certificate, you probably should take a little bit of time to get out the important information that would really hurt you if someone got access to your account.
I see your point. And I'm not actually taking my emails over to Skynet because we all know how that turns out and we get the Terminators and all that stuff. So
they're coming.
I'll try to protect my data a little bit better.
That's all we can do. That's all we can do. Like I say, it's not about being secure. It's just about being more secure than the next potential victim, whoever else is on Steve's plate.
It's like running from the bear. You don't have to be fast. You just have to be faster than the other guy, right?
That's it. Absolutely.
Outrun
the other person.
I'm seeing the light. I'm seeing the light. I guess I'll spend this week cleaning up my inbox.
It's fun times, man. Clean up the inbox, and while you're in there, go ahead and generate some one-time passwords and start using those.
That's a good point.
Start using them. And, you know, make sure your daughter's actually deleting those emails. She may just be keeping them in other folders. You might want to check on that.
No, she's a deleter. She's definitely a deleter, yep. But that is a good point because there is an archive function, and I'm not sure exactly how that works because you still have, in Gmail at least, you can archive an email.
You can, absolutely. And it doesn't
it didn't go anyway. Yeah, but it's just in another folder.
Yep. But it makes you feel better, doesn't it?
Well, not anymore.
Exactly. That's the idea, man. There you go. Some good stuff for you. It's been good talking to you. Do you have like any pick of the week?
A pick of the week.
Yeah, you know, something interesting that you would like to share, maybe a movie, a book, a podcast, a news article you heard, anything cool.
Well, actually, you know, I was thinking about this recently, and this is a security, information security related podcast.
Okay.
And so one thing that I would like to share, when I was a kid, one of the things that got me interested in the idea of securing data and exploiting data was a movie called Hackers.
Love that movie.
Yeah, Angelina Jolie, a bunch of other folks that were really popular in the day. But a really great movie. And then in that, for people who have been around a little while, I didn't realize this until later, one of the major systems to hack was called a Gibson. And hacking a Gibson was your credentials as a elite hacker, right?
Man, those days are so long gone.
Yes, but there was no such thing as a Gibson. What I found out is that the term cyberspace actually originated in a book called Neuromancer, written by William Gibson. So if you would ever like to do a little reading, it's very cyberpunk, but it was written in the 80s, so it's a little dated in the way that they view what cyberspace would be like, but a very enjoyable book. Check out Neuromancer by William Gibson.
Well, that's very cool. I'm going to check that out. That sounds really cool. Right. I will check that out. Now, for me, with my limited time, I like to just veg out and have a good laugh. So I've been watching a show called Our Flag Means Death.
It's I have not thought that one about. What is that about?
Pirates. But
well, are we talking about like pirates on the ocean or like pirates of Silicon Valley? What kind of pirates are we talking about?
We're talking like pirates on the ocean. The premise is there's this rich guy who decides that he's tired of doing the land life and being with his wife that he was forced to marry and these kids that he has. So he just leaves and goes and buys a ship and recruits a crew and decides he's going to become a pirate. And he's going to be a gentleman pirate.
Huh.
And yeah, imagine the fun things that can happen to a person who's trying to be a pirate that doesn't know how to be a pirate. So yeah, it's a very humorous show. Definitely enjoy it. It makes me laugh and takes my brain off the craziness that's happening in the world. But yeah, Our Flag Means Death. Check it out.
All right, I will.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, hey, since you're here, I'm going to go ahead and let you plug yourself, man. Go ahead. Throw it out there.
Oh, well, thank you, Rob. So, yes, my name is R. Brady Frost, and I am the author of Battle Mage Reborn. It's a series in the lit RPG space, which is basically taking a world that has game mechanics, very much like a role-playing game, and then creating a story around it. So the first book is called Second Chance, and just this past fall, the second book, The Broken Blade, was released. I am currently working on book three, but those are available on Amazon as an ebook. It's in Kindle Unlimited. You can also go on Audible. I've got audiobooks for both books out there. So yeah, if you're looking for some fantasy based role-playing game mechanics with a enjoyable, slightly dark story, go ahead and check it out.
I've read them both. I enjoy them. They're really good. Can I give a little bit of spoiler here for other people that are listening?
A little spoiler, maybe, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be a big spoiler. The idea is this guy has died, and they are offering the service where they basically take brain scans and grab your personality, and then what they do is they upload you into this game when you die. So the main people in the game have all passed from Earth and are living on in this game as characters.
That is correct. Yes. Talk about having all of your data in one place.
Yes. be careful what you delete there. Yeah, good books. I definitely enjoy them. Highly recommend them if you're interested in those kinds of things. And even if you're not, maybe check it out. You might like it. But hey,
yeah. Thanks for the recommendation. Thank you for enjoying my books. I've always encouraged folks to read my books. My email address is in there. I will archive your email, I guess, if you reach out to me. But you know, please drop me a line and let me know how you like the books.
Will do. Will do. Hey, man, it's been great having you on the show, and hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you in about two more weeks.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio,
at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.